6:05, welcome back. Welcome to hour number three of the Todd Brummel Camp Show. We like to call it the Big Hour. It's brought to you by our friends at Hawkeye Title and Settlement in Iowa City. Steve Anderson and his crew in business for 14 years, although, as Steve noted earlier today on Twitter, this is the hour of the program he oftentimes doesn't even get to listen to because he's at Iowa City West basketball games. So even though he's not always with us listening, we do appreciate his sponsorship here, Hawkeye Title and Settlement, bringing you the third and final hour, an abbreviated one. We are off tonight at 6:45 in large part due to Iowa City West basketball. Alex is going to have the call on that game on both FM frequencies, 106.3 in Iowa City, 107.5 in Cedar Rapids. We've also got a game on 1600 AM. In the meantime, Rob Howe from HawkeyeNation.com sitting in, as he does every Friday with us in the final 90 minutes to 75 minutes, depending on whether or not Alex has to leave early. And you said it best. We kind of touched on this on Love It or Leave It earlier today, but you never really know when something is going to come up at one of these routine weekly news availabilities. And Fran McCaffrey wasn't too happy with Scott Docterman from thelandat10.com earlier today. Scott asking about basically his job performance and whether or not he felt he would be maybe on the hot seat. And we have that. This is the exchange with Scott and Fran, and we'll play it. If you missed it, it was the open to the show today back in hour number one.
Coaches in your situation at a lot of schools might feel a little heat to be on the hot seat after a season like this. Do you feel any kind of pressure based on the way the season has unfolded?
No. Not at all.
And is that because of the faith that Gary has showed you with a contract extension before the season?
No. It has to do with body of work.
So you think from what you accomplished, it's allowed you to have a bad season? You have enough equity in the bank that a bad season shouldn't
affect anybody. You shouldn't even be bringing it up, to be honest with you.
Why shouldn't I bring it up? I mean, you're in last place.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, it's body of work. There's a lot of things to be evaluated. Maybe you should look at that.
Now, Scott's probably the only guy that wouldn't back down after the second or third volley, and he kept going. But we talked in hour number one, body of work. We've been over the body of work. This is 8 years with Fran McCaffrey. It's only the second time that Iowa has missed out on the postseason, and you have to pretty much give a pass on year one, which was a 4-14 Big Ten campaign and 11-20 overall. But then it's NIT, NIT, NCAA, 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 NIT, and then this year. That being said, I think you and I both agree it's fair to ask questions, especially to somebody who's paid a lot of money to coach a basketball team. I mean, this is not life or death here, but Fran bristled at the question. They're in last place. They underperformed this season and looked really bad doing so. Fair to question him? 319-366-1600. I say yes.
I am in full agreement with you, and that's what we touched on Love It or Leave It. And Fran shouldn't be surprised by the question. I mean, he's, a sports fan. As I said, his brother's a journalist back in the Philadelphia area. I think he works in Delaware, one of the Northern Delaware papers.
But, which was a big deal when Fran got hired here. He brought it up all the time. Hey, my brother's a sport. I know what you guys, I know your business. I know what, it's no big deal to me. Now it's suddenly a big deal.
Yeah, and I think I'll, I give a little bit of leeway today because it's been a hard season. It has to have felt like, however many months it's been has to have felt like years when you're, as you said, it's not only that they're losing, it's the way they're losing. They're just historically bad on defense. He's tried so many different things, tried to push so many different buttons, and nothing has worked. I don't think anybody thought this was a Final Four team, but it is just woefully underperformed. And I'm sure he's feeling some internal pressure within himself that that this team is this bad. And there really isn't a major or a clear reason for it, you know, when you consider that Peter Jok is the only player that they lost off of last year's team, which was one of the first four out of the NCAA tournament. You had two pretty good freshmen, and the team has just fallen off a cliff. Now, it's not unprecedented. You can look at the opponent they play on Sunday, Northwestern, who I would argue is as much of a disappointment this year as Iowa is, and it happens. But the crux of this is he should be able to handle that question without bristling at it. And I agree with him. I think you probably do, too, with the substance of his answer. He has earned, he does have the equity to have a season like this. If he can,
yes, one, if singular.
Exactly. If he can bounce back next year. But he's now missed the tournament 2 years in a row. If he misses it again next year, I certainly would think that his seat would warm up, regardless of the contract extension.
Here is another angle in this, and I'm constantly thinking about this. You also have an extremely tough season from a personal standpoint with him because of Connor's health, which he has been dealing with, not only repercussions as a coach and how that affects his job performance, but he's a father. And he's a father who's probably been really worried about his son, who, as Chad Lystico detailed in the Des Moines Register, this was a really nasty, nasty illness that sidelined Connor McCaffrey. Strep throat and mononucleosis. The strep went undiagnosed, which led to a number of complications. Waking up in the middle of the night, he couldn't breathe. He's coughing up blood at one point in time. When you stop and think about that and realize that that's Fran McCaffrey's kid, and he's been dealing with that on top of a team that's woefully underperformed. Okay, I can understand totally where the frustration has set in with him. He talks about body of work, and we've been over this, three NITs, three NCAA tournament appearances, but only one NCAA tournament win. That is problematic.
It is, I think, for me, and you're fully aware of this too, because you suffered through watching 3 years of Todd Licklider as well. If you put it into the context of where he had to bring this program from, and what he was able to do, and what he's been able to do, I think that context has to be given to this situation as well. But having said that, you get to a certain point, and you either maintain or you bring it, you raise the level. They've regressed the last 2 years, and that's really where we are right now heading into next season. Can they bounce back, or will they continue to regress?
You folks out there are welcome to join the conversation as well, although I have a feeling many of you are just done talking about Iowa basketball, and I don't begrudge you for that. 319-366-1600 is the number if you want to call in and join the conversation and maybe pick Rob's brain for a fresher perspective on this, because I have a feeling you guys know exactly where I stand on this. To me, as somebody who has followed Iowa basketball since I've been cognizant of it, the biggest issue here is it just feels like Iowa has spent the better part of two decades just trying to get back to where the program was under Tom Davis. And you had Bob Bowlesby making the decision to not renew Tom Davis's contract, and the program was going to go to the mythical next level. And then Steve Alford looked successful for a time, but the NCAA wins were few and far between. And then you had off-court issues that ultimately just absolutely blew up any chance he had to succeed with the program. Alford left for New Mexico. They looked hard and long for a head coach. Todd Licklider was not choice number one, two, or three.
Stallings
Rick Majerus's name was floated around. I know Bruce Pearl had a lot of fan support at the time, but he wasn't interested in taking the job. Tom Crean was still at Marquette.
He was
at that time, and
I
know
his name coming up.
I did have somebody with ties to the program tell me that he had back-channeled and expressed interest in the job. Ultimately, the search firm delivers Todd Licklider, and hey, National Coach of the Year, it just didn't work out. His personality didn't mesh with the fans. They didn't win, and then the players started leaving the program at an alarming rate. So, body of work. Getting back to that comment from Fran, to go to the NIT in year number two, I think may have been one of his most impressive coaching jobs that he's done since he's been here. And it was great. Matt Gaten's got some postseason action his final year. You go back to the NIT in 2013, you get to Madison Square Garden championship game. Okay, program's building. They were 9-9 in the Big Ten that year. They follow it up next year by going 9-9. They get to the NCAA tournament for the first time in what I think it would have been 7 years or something like that.
Yeah.
That's an accomplishment. And then you go 12-6, 12-6. You're tied for third place in the Big Ten back-to-back years, back-to-back NCAA tournament appearances, including your first tournament win since 2001 against Creighton out in out on Long Island. Okay. Then last year, pretty talented group, finishes 19-15, and a couple of those wins came in the NIT, so they get added on after the fact. They were 10-8, slipped back to a tie for fifth place in the Big Ten. Okay. And then this year, it just the wheels completely come off. So he wants us to look at the entire body of work. That's what we just did. And for every positive, I think there's a negative. I went over in hour number one. I don't think you can ignore the finishes in 14-16, where they lost five of their last seven down the stretch going into the Big Ten tournament and then lost the Big Ten tournament games. So,
and really, last year, they got whooped on by a reeling Indiana team in the Big Ten tournament, or they may have made the NCAA tournament last year. So I think what you're saying certainly is a factor.
So, again, you're asking to look at your entire body of work. I will oblige you on that. And when you do, you can parse it and say, okay, here's reasons why I think fans have reason to be concerned. And then the underlying story here goes back to November and the contract extension that we didn't hear about and find out after the fact. And had somebody on the text line earlier today said only Iowa would hand out a contract extension in the midst of a historically bad conference season. They gave it out before a Big Ten game had even been played. So you obviously don't have a crystal ball. You can't see the future, but this is a lot of really bad things converging at one place. And then to me, the intriguing part here is we had somebody on the text line earlier today bring it up, and I said I didn't know if I wanted to even handle it because it's a grenade. But you've got a really talented Patrick McCaffrey who's 2 years away.
Right.
And so you have fans that are almost nervous about Iowa underperforming next year because it could cost them one of their best recruits in a really long time because it just happens to be Fran's son. That's a circumstance. You couldn't write a story better if you were doing a drama about a college basketball program. So to me, that's really intriguing. What happens if Iowa struggles again next year? How many people say, but you've got to keep him around because of Patrick? I don't know. Do you keep a coach because his son is a highly talented recruit? I think we're going to find out if they struggle next year. Now, they could win and make all of this a moot point, and I hope that's the case. But I know better than that. From having covered this program for as long as I have, you never know.
And the other layer of that story is Connor McCaffrey, who you talked about before, who's had a foot injury, then the mono and the strep throat.
And wants to play baseball.
He's going to be in the point guard mix next year. And let's face it, that point guard position is the hot button with this team. Everybody says you got to have a point guard. If they don't get a point guard after this season, that falls to Connor. Now, he's got pressure. You got his brother coming down, you know, in a couple years. You've got Fran trying to recover from an awful season this year, and all of those things play in. And I'm not naive to think, and I I'm talking to some folks about this. This team, I think, started the season with some unrest in the locker room when Christian Williams left the day before the first exhibition game. That was just not, I mean, if you're just looking at that objectively, that was odd. And then in talking to Fran after it, you could tell he was not happy with it. And then talking with guys like Jordan Bohannon, they were upset about Christian leaving. And I don't know. I mean, I've heard things, but I'm not going to throw speculation out there. But I think it's fair to say that that situation, I don't know, it didn't tear the locker room apart, but it affected it.
I talked to someone a couple weeks ago that knows Christian, and all they said to me was, he's happy to be at Indiana State. And they left it at that, and it was open-ended, as in, he's happy to be at Indiana State. You can read into that any way you want. Oh. And again, the timing aspect of it, the eve of the first exhibition game. And then when we asked Fran about it, like you said, he didn't do a very good job of hiding his hand. No, you could tell that he was not necessarily over the moon about it.
And then he added last week's press conference, I don't know if you caught this, that had Connor not gotten hurt or been out of the lineup, he basically said they wouldn't have missed Christian Williams at all, which to me was not something he needed to say. And then to add on to information that you just gave from your source, I will say I dug into it a little bit this week, and a source told me that although, and this is a popular press release item, so-and-so is leaving the school to be closer to home. Well, from what I've learned, Christian's family has left Decatur, Illinois. They're not down there anymore. So he did not leave to get closer to home. So that was propaganda.
I've been to Decatur. I would also leave.
So Decatur, but that was kind of the window dressing that schools and players use when they're parting ways, maybe on not amicable terms.
It just, the whole situation's bizarre, and I don't know if you remember Alex and I, if you caught us talking about it in hour number two. What really is perplexing here is this is a team that was coming off a European trip. And those trips are normally about bonding and team building, and almost unanimously everybody says that they're better off for having taken those trips because you get to spend time working out together during the summer and you don't normally get that. It didn't really seem like it did any good for them this year, which is troubling.
And you wonder if that backfired, that they got closer on that trip, but one of the people that got close or was, you know, became more of a interwoven into the team was Christian Williams. So if you go on that trip and people bond and you take one of the players out of there that maybe is one of the main pieces of that team bonding, that pulls things apart a little bit. And, you know, as you said, something like that should bring a team together. What are they going to do this offseason to bond? Are they going to go, maybe they'll go to DeKalb.
PTL.
Decatur, excuse me.
PTL, yeah. the Defense First Summer League, which I'd say if you want to play primetime league basketball this year, for the first time ever, PTL is going to be about defense and make it almost a summer boot camp.
They talked all off. I did several stories this offseason about how they've been working on defense. And let's not forget, Todd, they stunk at defense last year. And
yeah.
Everybody's like, Peter Jack does it. Once he goes, there'll be a better defensive team.
He turned into a scapegoat at the end of last
right.
year for the bad defense.
Right.
And then, yeah, he wasn't there this year to blame.
Exactly.
Which is a really good point. And again, something that has sort of been glossed over here, but we had plenty of those folks on the program last year, too, that it's one guy, he's a shooter, and just sort of brings everybody else down.
I found it interesting the other night that Bohannon only played 21 minutes, and after the game, Fran basically said he felt Maishi Daly and his ability to play defense was the reason they went with him in the second half. That's one to keep an eye on.
There was, and you pointed it out, there was one play in that game where he got dusted defensively. And even in the Indiana game, a couple jab steps and left him in his sneakers. So I guess the bright spot is it's not just one player that you're piling on here in this in critiquing the team. It really is the collective team effort. Now, next year, because we had this discussion with the listeners this week, for the most part, people are pinning their hopes on next year. And Scott Docterman, Atlanta 10 today, pothole or sinkhole. Most fans are hoping that this is just a pothole. Joe Wieskamp, I think most people are pretty familiar with in this part of the state. We've seen him here locally. We've had some Muscatine games on KGYM. What do we know about C.J. Frederick coming in from Kentucky?
Doesn't play against great competition. Strangely enough, as good as Louisville and Kentucky are as basketball programs, not a lot of those kids are from in-state. Very few are, as a matter of fact. But he's had an outstanding year. He is up for Mr. Basketball in that state, one of the finalists. He's a really good shooter. That's the strength of his game. He's got to get stronger. I wouldn't classify him as a lockdown defender. I don't think Joe Wieskamp is a lockdown defender. I think those guys will help next year. They may even help more than Luka Garza and Jack Nungi did this year, or exceed what those guys have produced this year. But I don't think they're saviors. I don't think they're guys that come in and turn this program around. It's going to have to come from, one, the guys already on the roster getting better, and or two, maybe there are some defections from the guys that are currently on the roster. We've talked about Brady Ellingson perhaps being a graduate transfer. Maybe there are other guys that aren't happy with their playing time. Then it's incumbent upon the staff to go out and get guys to that work on this roster that can help the deficiencies. And we know it, Todd. We've talked about it all year. They need perimeter defenders. They just do. We talked about, you look at Robert Johnson from Indiana, and Green from Indiana, and Nate Mason, and, you go on and on down the list. Tony Carr from Penn State. Every team has really good guards in this league, and you need two-way guards. It's a guards game, and Iowa needs help in that area.
Defense. Right. They need You and I have touched on this as well. They need to address the defense somehow in the offseason, and most people look and say, bring in a coach, an assistant coach who's a defensive-minded guy. Then it becomes, how do you get rid of one of the three guys who are on the staff there? Because Fran's a loyal guy. They've all done a good job. You don't really want to see any of them go, and it puts Fran McCaffrey in a really tough spot. And I don't think Gary Barta is the type of athletic director, knowing how he's dealt with the football team in the past, he's not the type of guy to go to a coach and make an ultimatum.
Plus, he can't. He doesn't have any leverage now after that contract extension.
Well,
but I agree with you, and I also agree, I don't see Fran, firing a member of this staff. I just don't see it happening. If they move on their own accord, then I'm sure that he would look to address the defensive, maybe some defensive. If you watch Michigan this year, have you noticed how much better they are on defense? Beilein hired, he calls him his defensive coordinator, and they are light years better on defense.
I have noticed that, and Michigan was one of those teams, sort of like Iowa, where, and Beilein had that a little bit at West Virginia as well, where they were an offensive first team. They were going to try to shoot you out of the building on any given night, and any defense that they played was sort of a bonus. And you say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. John Beilein said, wait a minute, this isn't working. We got to be better defensively. And they have been. And again, we'll wait and see what happens this offseason, but we know the inclination, how Fran McCaffrey handles things. He's a loyal guy, and these guys have been there with him through thick and thin. And there's no leverage. There's nothing Gary Barta can do to twist Fran McCaffrey's arm into making a move. So it's all on Fran at this point, which to me is fascinating. And to fans has to be kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you saw feedback today from, you know, his press conference. On our Hawkeye Nation message boards, responses I got on Twitter, fans aren't happy right now with Fran. So, I mean, and I'm sure he knows that. He's not happy with himself, but next year's a critical year. I don't care what the buyout is. If you miss the NCAA tournament for a third straight year next year, man, I think about what attendance will be the year after that.
I'm just thinking about attendance Sunday night at 6:30 against Northwestern. We'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Kyle's going to have another big board update for you as well. 6:30, Todd Bromelkamp Show. Continuing on after this.
Look alive, Coach. Are you ready for next season? If you're thinking about coaching K-12 school-sponsored athletics in Iowa, add getting your state certification from Kirkwood Continuing Education to your game plan. Kirkwood handles the required instruction and fingerprinting. Kirkwood coaching authorization and recertification classes are going on now in Cedar Rapids and Iowa City. And now you can also take the classes online. Visit kirkwood.edu/coaching to get into the game.
Cedar Valley Entertainment presents Saturday, June 23rd, live at the U.S. Cellular Center in Cedar Rapids. T-Pain, Ja Rule, and Mike Jones. Tickets on sale now at the U.S. Cellular Center box office, Ticketmaster.com, or by calling 1-800-745-3000. T-Pain, Ja Rule, and Mike Jones at the U.S. Cellular Center, Saturday, June 23rd. Get your tickets now.
There are still companies that care, companies that have your back, companies that provide stability for you and your family. PMX Industries in Cedar Rapids is one of those companies. You can start at $17.27 an hour with great benefits you'd expect from a company that treats you like family. Sometimes it's the small things like holiday parties, summer picnics, and movie parties that speak volumes about your work family. Learn more about the PMX family at ipmx.com.
Each week, KGYM recognizes a local sports team for the win in the community. The Metro Spotlight is brought to you by Carpenters Union, Local 308 in Cedar Rapids and Local 1260 in Iowa City.
6:32, welcome back in. Todd Bromelkamp Show with you for about 10 more minutes. We've got high school basketball on the way, all three frequencies tonight, so we're going to be stepping aside a little early. It is the Big Hour, brought to you by our friends at Hawkeye Title and Settlement. You can find them on Highway 1 West in Iowa City, and Steve Anderson, he's probably going to be listening in on 106.3 FM tonight, even though he'll be there at the game. I picture him with a transistor radio listening to Alex's call as Iowa City West is in action on all of our FM frequencies tonight. It's a Cedar Rapids-Iowa City crossover. Kyle's got your last Midwest One Bank Big Board update of the night. Midwest One, with over 40 locations across the corridor for all your banking needs.
Rick Heller and the Hawkeye baseball team beat Virginia Tech today in walk-off fashion at the Sugar Bowl Baseball Classic. Ben Norman hit one to third in the top of the 10th. It was booted, and then Case Massner scored from second to give Iowa its first 4-0 start to a season since 2006. Fran McCaffrey spoke with the media today in Iowa City, and when asked if he felt he's on the proverbial hot seat, he pointed to his body of work as a whole and said the subject shouldn't even be brought up. And just a reminder, McCaffrey also recently signed an extension with a massive buyout. You might have heard about a bombshell report from Yahoo naming names and schools involved in the FBI probe into corruption in college basketball, and among the names that appeared was former Iowa State point guard Monte Morris. His mother confirmed that he and his trainer had a breakfast with Christian Dawkins, a former employee of ASM Sports. That firm is in the middle of the investigation, and Dawkins, in fact, was arrested last year, but Morris's mother denies that anything impermissible came of that meeting. We're going to be off the air at 6:45 today for a couple of juicy boys sub-state semifinal games. Kennedy's going to be at Prairie on 1600 AM, the historic main gym. And Cedar Rapids, Washington will be at top-ranked Iowa City West on 106.3 FM, the south gym, or 107.5 FM, the north gym. And then looking ahead to the weekend, the regular season's wrapping up for all the major universities. You can hear UNI hosting Missouri State in its finale tomorrow at 12:30 on the FMs. And then at 4, you can hear Iowa State on the road at number 21 West Virginia on the main gym.
Iowa State, as we mentioned, just 6 players tomorrow for that game, a major reason that they are 16-point underdogs. Donovan Jackson attending the funeral for his father who passed away earlier this week at the age of 52. Speaking of finales, we mentioned it. Two of the more disappointing teams in the Big Ten this year. Iowa hosts Northwestern Sunday night, 6:35, Carver Hawkeye Arena. Your best guess as to what the actual attendance will look like. Fans, I think, are still sort of behind the players, but the applause or the adulation for Fran McCaffrey every time he's introduced has sort of waned as the season has gone on. And that was something that we saw with Steve Alford once fans got a little tired of him. And I don't think it ever existed for Todd Licklider, but...
You know you're in trouble when they announce the coach's name. That period between announcing the name and the pep band starting whatever song they play, if it's like Fran McCaffrey and then the band starts playing right away, you know it's not, things aren't going well.
That's just I know because of trying to make it interesting in the last regular season game in the Big Ten, and they've got TV windows they need it, but that late of a tip-off. The Walking Dead is back on Sunday night, too. Carl is going to die, and I'm going to have to get it on DVR. And if you're mad about that, it's like the eighth season, and they revealed that he had been bitten at the end, the mid-season break. So that's not a spoiler alert, but I'm going to be sitting there, and I'm going to be upset that I'm going to have to avoid social media because I don't want any major spoilers from the episode. So Sunday night, that's a tough sell for... And perhaps appropriate, The Walking Dead returns to AMC on Sunday night, and we're watching two teams that I think will be considered The Walking Dead. Chris yeah. Collins at Northwestern. I mean, you go to the pinnacle of the mountain, you get Northwestern to the NCAA tournament for the first time ever last year, and...
They do a special on it on the Big Ten Network.
Yeah, and this was cool. Going to be the year where, okay, they got their life, but this was going to be their year, and... They had no traction this year.
They lost Samjay Lumpkin?
Yes.
That was like the one guy, you know, contributor.
The one guy that couldn't lose. It'd be like Iowa losing Tyler Cook or Bohannon.
They lost Lumpkin from last year's team. Iowa lost Cook or Jock from last year's team. Those guys should be playing in the NBA with the effects that their departures have had on these two teams. Northwestern's lost five in a row. They lost last night to a team we saw back in January in Iowa City, a not a very good Wisconsin team, and Northwestern lost to them last night on senior night with, you know, Scotty Lindsey, Bryant McIntosh, Gavin Skelly. It was their senior night, and they lost to a bad Wisconsin team.
I don't have the updated bracket in front of me. Iowa-Rutgers is pretty much locked in, or could the opponent still change at this point? For the Wednesday is locked in for Iowa.
Right. There's a huge game this weekend. It's Rutgers and Illinois. So okay. I think people should clear their schedules to be able to get out and watch that one.
Scout.
I don't know.
Get the scout. Make sure that you know what's coming with Rutgers.
I don't know what type. And, you know, this is big for Rutgers because this tournament's in New York City. So they're doing this for Rutgers. That's why they decided to finish in the bottom four, so they could give their fans an extra game. They could win five games in 5 days.
And just the whole idea of this tournament in New York City, and we'll end on this because I've got a Walking Dead fan who's now mad at me for spoiling it, and I can't help you there, I guess. Jim Delaney doesn't come out all that often and admit that he made a mistake, but he pretty much told Teddy Greenstein from the Tribune, yeah, I made a mistake here. They're open to playing the tournament in New York City and Madison Square Garden again, but they would do it on the regular schedule. They wouldn't want to push this. The Big East is not leaving Madison Square Garden anytime soon, right? So Jim Delaney can say whatever he wants. He knows that the Big East, that would be like the Big East saying, okay, we're going to play our conference tournament at the United Center because we want to try to get in the Midwest footprint. They're not doing that. And it was kind of stupid that the Big Ten did this for Washington, D.C. last year. And New York City especially, I think, is going to prove to have been a colossal misstep.
Yeah, I think their coverage will suffer. You were at the Pinstripe Bowl. The local coverage for that was minimal at best.
They had to bring the Yankees guy, right. The basically try to get some of the Yankees beat writers to show up and make it newsworthy so that they could ask questions about the Yankees to get mention of, oh, by the way, this press conference was part of the Pinstripe Bowl.
And some of those guys left, I noticed, after
yeah,
the baseball
it was like
portion.
Going, it was like showing up for a weekly news conference with Fran McCaffrey, and you go and you leave.
Right.
They were not interested in the football game, and ultimately they made a wise decision because I think parts of me are still thawing out from that game. I do get compliments on the stocking cap, though. I haven't worn the scarf a whole lot.
I haven't worn the scarf at all, but the hat has definitely come in handy.
The stocking
question.
Cap is, it's out in the vehicle in case I get stranded or something, or I leave the house and I forget it. So it's tucked into the center console as sort of an emergency stocking cap. So thank you very much, New Era Pinstripe Bowl.
And I wore that hat the night of the game because I needed it. I probably should have worn the scarf. Listen, with the Big Ten tournament, put the darn thing in Indianapolis. They do a good job with it.
Yeah, I've said the same thing.
As
much as I like the United Center in Chicago, right. It gets lost in the shuffle in Chicago. Indianapolis embraces that, unlike anything this side of the Indy 500. That is an event that city, they changed the names temporarily of the streets in downtown Indianapolis for the event. I would make it the permanent home.
It's an easy city for people to fly in and out of or drive in and out of. It's not, you know, Indiana and Purdue obviously are close to there, and some other schools are, you know, varying distances from there, but they enjoy having the tournament. We joked about this, you know, when we were at the Pinstripe Bowl. If we were to just go up to some random people on the street and ask them what they think about the Pinstripe Bowl, I don't think there'll be that many people paying attention to the Big Ten tournament. It's the Big East's arena. That's their tournament.
Maybe they can ask the guy that was on the subway train with us.
I hope that guy's doing all right.
There's a number of people I met on that trip in New York City that I hope are doing, including the waiter that may or may not have skimmed off the top of the bill.
Oh, he skimmed off the top of that bad boy.
Yeah. Got a big old bill, and I was paying cash, and suddenly I got a lot more change back than I was expecting.
He shared?
And it was worth it, man. That meal was fantastic. I can still close my eyes and taste that cheesecake.
He shared the wealth with you, no doubt about it.
This time next week, we're probably going to be talking about post-mortem with this team, unless there's some sort of miracle. They'd have to run the gauntlet to be playing next Friday, so this is pretty much it for Rob and I talking about games to come. We will both be there at Carver Hawkeye Arena on Sunday night. Join us on Monday for a look back at Sunday night's Iowa Northwestern game. It should be just as riveting as you expect it to be. That'll do it. High school basketball's on the way. All three KGYM frequencies. The Big Hour has been brought to you by Hawkeye Title and Settlement. We thank them for their sponsorship. Have a safe, enjoyable weekend, and we'll be right back here Monday. Local programming begins with the gym class at 3 o'clock.
Stuck in an expensive timeshare contract and feel like there's no way out? I'm Chuck McDowell.